Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Palm Springs, California, Progressive Talk, AM 1340, KPTR. And what a beautiful place. Man, it's like, I always love coming to Palm Springs. It is just one of the most beautiful cities. I used to come out here when it was a little tiny town. Anyhow, here we are. I'm keynoting a conference for AGNT. AGNT.org is their website if you want to get the information on it. There's information over at our website about it as well this weekend. And it being Friday, of course, brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. I think of him as America's senator. I think of this as America's town hall, weekly town hall meeting. And Senator Sanders is, and for those who may be recent to the show, is not a Democrat or an independent or a Republican. He is an independent. He was the longest serving independent in the House of Representatives. He's now moved over to the Senate, and one of two, and we won't mention the name of the other. just an absolute great guy, Senator Bernie Sanders. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom, for all those nice words. Good to be with you again.
It is always great having you. And I should mention, you have a great newsletter over at your website, sanders.senate.gov, and people should sign up for it. And after the first break here, you will be taking calls from our listeners at 866-303-2222.
And let me mention, we're going to be talking, obviously, about the financial crisis. We have a very good webpage up on our website, sanders.senate.gov. It includes some remarks that I made the other day on the floor of the Senate in opposition to the bailout. So if people want more information, they can go to our website. I think they'll enjoy it.
Great, great. So, I guess the obligatory thing to get out of the way is the debate last night. I don't know if you had a chance to catch it. Let's get right into the economy.
You know, the bottom line is, I mean, you know, there are some people who think that the governor of Alaska is some kind of idiot who could barely speak and so forth and so on. She's not. She's obviously bright. She's a good politician. She's a popular governor. And I think she presented her right-wing extremist point of view quite effectively.
Yeah.
I think Joe Biden did very, very well. I think that the momentum... I think given the seriousness of the moment in American history, people understand that we can't have four more years of this disastrous right-wing ideology in the White House, that they're not going to vote for Mr. McCain. And what we have to do is stay focused on what the real issues, and that's not Sarah Palin's personality or, you know, what her knowledge is about past Supreme Court decisions. It's whether or not you want to continue, basically, the disastrous ideology which has failed us in almost every single area of public life, or do you want to start moving this country in another direction? And to me, the answer is obvious. I have disagreements with Barack Obama, disagree with him on the vote yesterday in the Senate, the day before yesterday in the Senate on the bailout. But there's no question that in Obama and in Biden, you have two very, very bright guys who I think are going to do a heck of a lot better job listening to the needs of the middle class and working families, most importantly, who are going to be open, to ideas that will move this country very differently than where we have gone for the last 8 years. So to my mind, the immediate challenge that we have politically is to do everything that we can to elect Obama and Biden. I know the polls are looking good, but people should not be overconfident by any means. There are a lot of things that can happen in a month, so I would just urge people to work very, very hard to see that we end this Bush ideology and move in a new direction.
Yeah, let's not forget that coming out of the election, Michael Dukakis was 17 points ahead of George Herbert Walker Bush, right. And everybody said that Dukakis was unbeatable. And then, what, about five weeks out, they rolled out the Willie Horton ads?
Right. So these guys, that's right. So, I mean, I think at this moment things are looking fairly good, but things can change on a dime, and let's work on it. Let me just jump to the issue I know that is on people's minds. I voted against the bailout. Helped lead the opposition to the bailout. We lost very overwhelmingly on the floor of the Senate. There's going to be a vote that's taking place, perhaps as we speak during this program, in the House. My guess is they would not have brought it up in the House unless they thought it was going to pass, and it probably will pass. Now, what were my objections to the legislation in the Senate? Well, there are a number of objections. Number one, you are giving $700 billion to the Secretary of the Treasury, more or less.
You're really giving it to George Bush, because the Secretary of the Treasury serves at his pleasure.
Right. Or you're giving it to the former CEO of Goldman Sachs, who, along with his other CEO friends, are responsible for the crisis that we're in right now. And one of the points that I made on the floor of the Senate is it seemed pretty weird to me that you would be giving $700 billion to the guy who was in the midst of Wall Street greed. A guy, and I'm not here just, you know, I don't have anything personal vendettas against Henry Paulson. There are many of these guys there who made hundreds of millions of dollars. Paulson himself received, I think it was a $29 million bonus a few years ago at a time when, I think it was 2006, where the five major financial institutions gave out $39 billion in bonuses. I mean, is this for a start? And this looks to me like it's the fox guarding the hen house. Are these really the guys that you want to entrust to saving the financial system? That's issue number one. Number two, despite some of the rhetoric that you're hearing, we are going to know very, very little about what our tax dollars, where our tax dollars are going in terms of illiquid assets, what we end up owning. You know, when Warren Buffett buys something, he knows what he has. When we end up buying something, I don't think we're going to know what we have. While certainly the bill in the Senate now is, and going to the House now, is a lot better than the insane proposal brought forth by Paulson, which is a very short proposal. Give me $700 billion, I'll do what I want, have a nice day. That was that proposal.
Don't you dare look.
This one, you know, is better, of course. But the oversight that people are talking about, by and large, rests with people in the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. Different people, but these are people within the Bush administration. Very significantly, the root cause of this problem is the housing bubble, the fact that housing values are going down, the fact that millions of people are facing foreclosure, and this bill does not in any effective way deal with that issue. The bill, you know, you're hearing rhetoric, well, we're going to get to this excessive executive compensation. It doesn't, not really. It's loose enough so that any smart CEO can still make out like a bandit. Also, what this legislation does not do is ask the $64 question of how we got into this horrendous mess in the first place. And all of that deregulation that you and I have talked about a dozen times, part of the right-wing ideology, which says back in 1999, let's repeal Glass-Steagall. And I should say that while it was pushed forward by Gingrich and his right-wing friends, it was Bill Clinton who signed that bill. It was Larry Summers and Bob Rubin in the Treasury Department who went along with this. Yeah. So this is not just the right-wing Republicans. You know, and
a lot of people were drinking that Kool-Aid.
Yes, they were. And if you read the speech that I made in 1999, it reads very well today in suggesting that breaking down these firewalls, creating unregulated industries where so much money is at stake was a bad idea. Then the other issue that is also not being talked about is the concept of too big to fail. We are bailing out Wall Street because you have entities which, if they go down, take the entire economy with them. In my view, as I've mentioned on this show before, if it's too big to fail, it's too big to exist. What has happened, Tom, in the last 3 weeks? What you have seen, among other things, are huge entities like Bank of America, swallowing up other huge entities like Countrywide and Merrill Lynch. Does that sound to you like we're beginning to understand the need to deal with this too-big-to-fail concept?
This is like the last stages of monopoly, Bernie.
Exactly.
You know, Wells Fargo just got bought Wachovia. They said, we don't even need any government bailout. We'll just buy it.
That's right. So you're going to see more concentration of ownership, more dangers of too big to fail. And does anyone have any doubt that 5 years from now we'll be back to where we are? And somebody goes, well, why did they allow Bank of America to buy Countrywide and Merrill Lynch? Didn't they understand? Well, that's what's going on right now. And the other issue is you know, this is complicated stuff. And what's happening in terms of freezing of credit is huge and very, very significant. But there's another aspect. And that just is all over this country. We're moving to a recession. This bill does nothing about stimulating our economy, put money into infrastructure, and creating good-paying jobs. Last but not least, who pays for it? Obviously, it's the middle class and working class and not wealthy people.
Yeah, a whole bunch of very, very good reasons to vote against it, and good on you for doing so. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie. Sanders.Senate.gov. His website, ours, TomHartman.com and AirAmerica.com. Tom Hartman live from Palm Springs, California here.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Fresh opinions and news you can use. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com. Now, back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com.
Past the hour. Yeah, we're on both of the satellite radios here, XM Series. Anyhow, welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you in Palm Springs, KPTR, AM 1340, Progressive Talk. And Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Bernie, ready for some phone calls?
Let's do it.
Okay, Frank in Phoenix, Arizona. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey there, Senator. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a person that me and my significant other make $40,000 a year. We have a senior student that is preparing to go to college and one unemployed person living with us. They're going to plop down an $8,000 bill upon me and my better half, and for this $700 billion bailout, plus they already gave them $630 billion just this past week. Is there no decency up there? They're punishing me for not buying a home and or speculating. Is there any way to be able to change this after Barack? Because I'm telling you, if they don't get health care, and please take this up there, if they don't get health care within the next year and Barack starts legislating as a blue dog, I'm never going to vote for a Democrat again. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, Frank, thank you. You know, in your brief question, you raised a lot of very important issues, philosophical issues, political issues. Let me just deal with them a little bit. Essentially, I agree with you. And I brought forth there was only one amendment offered on this bill, and it was my amendment. And what the amendment very simply said is, look, I, Senator Sanders, don't agree with this bailout. But if you're going to pass a bailout of $700 billion, who should pay for it? Should it be Frank and his wife and tens of millions of people who are struggling to keep their heads above water economically? People who have seen, by and large, a significant decline in their standard of living since George W. Bush has been president. Should those be the people whose money is being placed at risk, as Frank indicated, to the tune of $2,200 a person, close to $9,000 for a family of four? That's one way you can do it. The other way you could do it is say, well, let's look at it a different way. Since Bush has been president, there has been a massive transfer of wealth from the middle class to the upper class. You have a situation where, at least until recently, the top 400 individuals, 400 people, have seen their wealth increase by $670 billion. $670 billion since Bush has been president. That's just 400 people. Who should, and what we propose, is a 10% surtax on their income of people making at least $500,000 a year, or households making $1 million a year. That would bring in over $300 billion in a five-year period, enough to move forward with this bailout. And that was the question. I have to tell you that my amendment in a voice vote did not get very much support. I got no support from the Republicans, number of Democrats who were not supportive. So I think Frank asked the right question. Is it the collapsing middle class who has to pay for this, or the upper-income people who have made out like bandits? But this is just part of the mentality that exists in Washington, where I should tell you right now, as the House votes on this bill, you have all of the big money interests and their lobbyists working overtime. You have the Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, the Business Roundtable. You have and other big business groups desperately descending on Congress saying, hey, our people shouldn't have to pay for this bailout. Go to the middle class. Go to the working class. Make them pay for it, despite the fact that we were the ones who screwed up. So I agree with Frank. What we have got to do is, after we elect, hopefully, Barack Obama president, we need a strong grassroots movement which not only begins to deal with the financial mess, but begins to deal with the economy and, among other things. A staff member of mine pointed out, just get this one fact, in the midst of a $700 billion bailout for Wall Street, if we invested $140 billion in infrastructure, in rebuilding our roads, our schools, our bridges, building affordable housing, breaking our dependency on foreign oil, moving to energy efficiency and sustainable energy, $140 billion. Do you know how many jobs we can create, Tom?
No, I don't.
We can create 6 million decent-paying jobs.
Phew.
Now, what about that as an economic strategy? 6 million jobs, and you know what you get out of it? You get a new infrastructure. You break our dependence on foreign oil.
And that's for a fifth of the cost of what they just...
That's right. Yeah. But there's not one bloody word of that in this legislation. So this is part of the old trickle-down theory. You know, give tax breaks to billionaires and they'll create prosperity. In this case, give Wall Street the money and they'll do just everything fine. I mean, if you believe that, trust me, you don't know very much about what's going on. Now, also, Frank raises another question. It raises a political question. And I think his political question is, you know, where are the Democrats on all of this stuff? Well, what we can say is that the original Paulson-Bush proposal was unbelievably bad. I mean, obscenely and ridiculously bad. $700 billion, blank check, do whatever you want. The Democrats worked very, very hard to make it a better bill. It is a somewhat better bill. But I am disappointed that we didn't have Democrats standing up and taking on Wall Street, taking on the Bush administration, showing a clear difference of approach. And I think long-term, not short-term, that will hurt the Democrats unless they get their act together.
Yeah, I agree. Back even in 32, the Democrats were passing legislation that would give jobs. Hoover vetoed it.
That's right.
but they passed
it.
Yeah, exactly. So, hopefully things will change in January. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, sanders.senate.gov. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. It's Brunch with Bernie. Our hour with Senator Bernie Sanders every Friday. Sanders.Senate.gov is website. Ours is TomHartman.com and, of course, AirAmerica.com. 866-303-2270, our phone number. And Bernie, Dave in Indiana is on the line with a question for you.
Okay. Yeah, I have a couple real quick ones. The FDIC insurance being raised to $250,000, is that for all accounts across the board, every FDIC account? And two, especially individual accounts, and two, How long is it going to last? Because it's temporary only. And one other thing, I wish that somebody could get a word to Obama about his troop strength, you know, about saying the surge won't work, because on the 21st of July 2008 Nightline, they showed a January 10th, 2007 clip that he said the troop surge alone won't work unless the political situation changes in Iraq between the Shia and Sunni. And the generals have also said, on the ground, saying that this surge would have never worked without these guys coming together. And two, with us paying off the different people to work with the U.S. And he never says that.
Okay. In terms of the FDIC, I think the answer is yes, but I don't have the information in front of me. I think it will cover all accounts going from $100,000 to $250,000. The concern there was that if that was not done, money that was in smaller community banks would drift out of those banks, threatening those banks to go into larger banks, where money markets were, in fact, covered. In terms of Obama and the surge, well, I think there are a number of points to be made. The most important point, and I think Joe Biden did a good point in raising that issue last night, the amount of money that we're spending in Iraq right now, which is about $10 billion every single month, dwarfs the amount of money we're spending in Afghanistan, which is the country that harbored the people who attacked us on 9/11, and the situation there is deteriorating. And I think also when you talk about Iraq and you talk about whose judgment was correct, you have in McCain a guy who maybe even stronger than Bush was the one who wanted us to get into that war in the first place.
The day after 9/11, he was talking.
Was he saying?
Yeah, in the media. Yeah.
I mean, and a war which has done, which, by the way, I mean, not only has it been a disaster unto itself, but if you think it's not related to the financial crisis that we have today and the driving up the national debt, you would be mistaken. We have spent $10 billion every single month, and it simply goes on to the credit card, which impacts the value of the dollar, which makes our economy much weaker.
Okay. Jerry in Miami, Florida, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good afternoon. Senator, I would like to know why the current bailout legislation does not outlaw or make illegal mortgage-backed securities, credit default swaps, short-selling of stock you don't even own in order to drive the price.
Oh, Jerry, you're raising, I mean...
I'll listen to you off air.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
What Jerry is talking about in terms of credit default swaps, and we can get into hedge funds, this is an area that about three people in the world who understand it, and I'm not quite sure they understand it, but that's precisely what the problem is. What you have is an estimated, I think, Tom, something like $62 trillion in credit default swaps flying around the universe. These are all, and here's the important point, as a result of deregulation work done by former Texas Senator Phil Graham, who was, as you know, McCain's chief economic advisor, we opened up the window to allow all of these enormously exotic and complicated financial instruments to be developed. And the goal of all of these things is to make a quick buck for very, very few people, which is why you were seeing until recently hedge funds completely unregulated making huge sums of money. And by the way, there are people who know a lot more about this stuff than I do who worry very much about the impact of hedge funds undergoing serious financial losses and what that means to the entire system. But the point that Jerry is making, essentially, is that a large part of our economy today, of the world economy, takes place in an unregulated, secretive environment where nobody knows what is going on. And that is an absolute disaster, which gets us back to the point that I raised earlier in the program, which this legislation certainly does not deal with, and that is sensible regulation so that we have transparency in the marketplace. Jerry says, well, why doesn't this happen? Well, hey, Jerry, right now in Washington, D.C., you're going to find some of the most powerful financial forces in America right on Capitol Hill lobbying frantically to make sure not only that we do not end this the secrecy within the financial transaction community, but that we make middle class people pay for this bailout. So there's very, very powerful forces at stake. We're dealing with trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, and this will be a gargantuan fight, which I hope we will begin after Obama is elected. But Jerry is quite right to put his finger on a very important point, and that is we need to re-regulate. We need to do away with these exotic financial instant transactions that nobody understands except the very wealthy and powerful, and that it is a very, very dangerous process for the entire world economy.
It's almost like a couple of middle-class guys were brought into a casino and given a $20 million line of credit and told just have fun. I mean, just to put this in perspective.
No, it's worse than that, Tom. There's a whole economy out there of trillions and trillions of dollars, and nobody understands or even knows what's going on.
Right, no, that's my point. The entire economy of the planet, the GDP of the planet, is $62 trillion. The according to the Bank of International Settlements, the total amount of all of these various instruments, all of these the derivative instruments, is $1,000 trillion.
Right.
A quadrillion, $1,000 trillion.
And you go up to the average American and you say, explain to me what a credit default swap is. If there's one person in 1,000 who even knows what that is, let alone can explain it, I would be surprised. So what we have done with all of this secrecy, with all of this lack of transparency, what we have done is give unbelievable power to a handful of people who every single day are playing with huge sums of money. And that has got to end. That is in a totally irrational system.
And most of it is just gambling. It's just gambling.
That's right. And basically, a lot of it was based on the fact, oh, we think housing markets are going to go up and up and up, and the value of housing is never going to go down. Well, that's a brilliant theory. It's called a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can buy these instruments based on the weather. Anyhow, Chuck, in Venice, California, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, guys. Hey, Bernie, you're absolutely on the money, as it were, about this outrageous omission of an NRA-type plan to get people working on infrastructure as well as everything else.
Right.
Anything else that I can think of. But, you know, this morning I found out that to add insult to injury, this bill was larded with other expenditures, including, apparently, $100 million for a Puerto Rican rum company and other sum for an aero company.
Now, Chuck,
responsible for this?
If I could just toss in here, Bernie, real quickly, and excellent question, Chuck. The aero company is in Portland, Oregon, and Earl Blumenauer is our congressman from Portland, representing Portland. He's a good guy. He's a good progressive Democrat. And they threw that in there hoping that it would get him to vote for the bill because he voted against it. And he came out this morning and said, hey, sorry, guys, that's not going to make me vote for this thing.
Well, what can I say to Chuck? What Puerto Rican rum has to do with the financial crisis, I am not quite sure, but that's the way politics is done. And that's simply an effort to buy votes.
Yeah, this is, very, very simply. Sean in Vancouver. Hey, Sean.
Senator Sanders, I have your speech on tape, and I intend to show it to friends, family, and acquaintances for the rest of my life. I'm going to tell them the story of the man who stood in the breach and tried to stop the Wall Street coup d'etat that they're putting the final touches on after 30 years of deregulation. But anyway, Senator Sanders, not only is the fox guarding the hen house, not only is the fox now eating the hens, now with the attempt to repeal the mark-to-market post-Enron, post-Arthur Andersen accounting rules, the fox is going back to the ledger and trying to change the entries in the ledger. And we need the Justice Department in here because people are blinded by the financial cost of this. They're committing criminal acts by trying to get the mark-to-market rules changed.
Right. Okay. Sean makes a very good point. And I think, and I will ask for, we just got to figure out the most effective way to do this. I mean, not only has there been irresponsibility, to say the least, and unparalleled greed and contempt for ordinary people and denial of basic economic law in this whole process, I suspect there has been massive fraud as well. And we're going to have to bring in some very sophisticated accountants to take a hard look at the fraud that has gone on. You know, when I was on the floor of the Senate giving the speech that Sean referred to, what I did is put up the pictures of the people who have, in fact, led us to where we are today. You know, and you have people not only like Henry Paulson, who was the former CEO of Goldman Sachs, but, you know, the heads of Lehman Brothers, the heads of J.P. Morgan Chase, people who have made hundreds of millions of dollars by just doing totally irresponsible, if not illegal acts. And this is an issue we have got to deal with.
Yeah, we really do. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie, Sanders.Senate.gov. 45 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Fresh opinions and news you can use. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com. This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com.
Now, Daddy didn't like trouble, but if it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side that he'd be on. He never was a hero for this county's shining light, but you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right. He'd say, you've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string.
It's the program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a corporation, a person rather, and we dare to say no, it's a corporation. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. It's Brunch with Bernie, Senator Bernie Sanders, Sanders.Senate.gov, his website, on the air with us, and Bernie, Jerry in Santa Barbara, California is on the line with you.
Okay. Yes, Bernie, I really enjoy your talk this morning. Why aren't we backing something like the Soros plan, where we would get an equity interest in the firms that were buying these uncertain and unquantifiable securities? At least we'll have some measure of insurance. We'll know they're not selling us just their toxic junk.
That's exactly right, Jerry. I mean, that's one of the things that I have fought for, and Soros is right. As I mentioned earlier, you know, when Warren Buffett buys something, he knows the value of what he's getting, and we don't. And that is one of the many, many problems. The fear right now is that these banks are going to sell us junk that is worthless and keep the good stuff, and the taxpayers pick up the bill. So I think you're quite right, Jerry. But, again, what is going on here is you have very, very powerful special interest whose goal it is to protect Wall Street, protect the banks, and stick it to the ordinary taxpayer of this country. And that's the fight that some of us have been waging, but it's a fight that we're not winning right now. Tom, what I want to say before we go any further is, and I'll take the next question in a minute, but is I want people to focus on the really big issues of what's happening right now in America and what this crisis is all about, because sometimes we get a little bit lost in the weeds here. What this is about has an enormous amount to do with the incredible concentration of ownership and wealth in America, the fact that the wealthiest 1% earn more income than the bottom 50%, the fact that politically what that money does is doing what it is doing this minute, right now in Congress, with these folks with huge sums of money representing the largest banks, the largest corporations. We have the Chamber of Commerce there representing every big corporation in America, the Business Roundtable, who are the CEOs of the super large corporations. We have the American Bankers Association. We have the American Manufacturers Association, the National Association of Manufacturers. All of these guys at this minute are right now descending on the House of Representatives saying, you vote to make sure that it's the working class people who pick up this bailout, not me and my friends. And that leads you to the next issue, which is the need to reform how we do politics in America, make sure that elected officials do not have to be dependent upon these guys for their money, whether it's the public funding of elections. It means taking a hard look, as you and I have discussed so often, about media in America. Who owns the media? Why is it that the average person understands so little about the financial system that we are functioning under, so that we are presumably faced with an alternative that unless you give Wall Street $700 billion, the economy disintegrates? Is that the only alternative? I think not. But, you know, do you hear serious discussion in media about the problems? Do we have serious debates on these issues? I think not. So I want you know, people to continue to focus on these issues. To my mind, once again, what this campaign is about, if McCain wins, it's four more years of disaster from which I think the middle class may never recover in our lifetimes. If Obama wins, we've got a chance. You got a chance. No guarantees here, but at least an opening to develop a progressive movement to make sure that the middle class is heard. One of the things that I do like about Obama is that he was a grassroots community organizer. And there is a hope that he, in fact, will go to the grassroots to say, I need your help to take on these big money interests. And if that is, and we have got to be very vigorous in moving in that direction. So I wanted to just get back to what these issues are. This crisis just puts right out there in the open all of the contradictions that we are currently seeing in our society right now.
Very, very well said, Bernie. Thank you. Tim in Los Angeles, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Senator Sanders, currently I'm sitting in a parking lot of my federal credit union in Montebello, Cotemino. And my question is there legislation, or can you create legislation to prevent, say, the FDIC were to collapse, that, you know, the treasurer will not, you know, the Secretary of the Treasury will not take money out of the NCUA, which is the, and
will not take money out of what? I'm sorry, Ken.
NCUA, National Credit Union Administration.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And to I guess pop up the FDIC, because credit unions follow the Glass-Steagall Act, and they have
right,
never
participated. Right. Ken, let me just mention, thank you for that good question. I used to be in the House, a member of the Banking Committee, Financial Services Committee, and got involved with credit unions both in my own state of Vermont and all over this country. And you're quite right. Here you have credit unions. All they are, they're democratically controlled. Their investments are safe. They help homeowners. They help small businesses. They help the people in their communities. And you know what? We're not having to bail them out. We're not having to bail them out. So, yes, Ken, I am a strong, strong supporter of credit unions. My only criticism is they're not aggressive enough. They should play a more active role in our economy. But these are not the guys who are engaged in unscrupulous lending practices, risky, reckless lending practices. They're paying attention to the needs of their community, and they're doing just fine. And we certainly will not allow money being taken from them to bail out Wall Street.
So you think that that's a pretty much a certainty. Bernie, we just have about 35 seconds here. It wouldn't be fair to drop another caller in. The House is getting close to vote on this bailout bill. What are your thoughts on what's going to happen?
I think my political guess is the bill would not have come up unless they have the votes, that it will probably pass. But I think I want people just to keep let's keep our eyes on the prize, and let's continue to do everything that we can, A, to elect Obama, and B, to develop the grassroots movement that we need to move this country in a progressive direction.
Yep. Amen. Amen. Sanders.Senate.gov, Bernie's website. Check it out. Sign up for his newsletter. Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie, thanks again so much for
coming. Good to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
Always great. 57 minutes past the hour. We will be back. We're going to check into John McCain's medical records, and it's Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com. This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. 10 a.m. more or less on the West Coast, 1 p.m. on the East Coast. We're broadcasting today from Progressive Talk AM 1340, KPTR, in beautiful Palm Springs, California, where I will be keynoting an AGNT conference here this evening. And doing a workshop tomorrow. AGNT.org is the website. It's Anything Goes Friday. We're going to get on with your phone calls. Anything you want to talk about. I have a feeling there's a whole lot of folks with opinions about last night's debate. We'll get into those topics. What's going on? It looks like the House is getting ready to vote on the bailout bill. We'll see where that goes. The Dow is up. Interesting in these times of disaster. Gee. But first, I wanted to check in with Dr. Ronald Braunau and Matt Stoller. BraveNewFilms.org. Last week we had Robert Greenwald on, and he was talking about how Brave New Films has spearheaded an effort, and you can see the video over at BraveNewFilms.org, spearheaded an effort to get John McCain to release his medical records. This is not some, you know, political stunt. This is a serious question, particularly after last night. Last night, you know, Sarah Palin comported herself decently for a car salesperson. I mean, you know, if I was an employer, I would consider hiring her for a job in sales. She's obviously a very good salesperson. But a deep and substantial understanding of the issues, being ready to be president of the United States, the temperament to be the person who's going to stare down Vladimir Putin or have her finger on 10, 11,000 nuclear weapons, no. And that means John McCain, to the extent that, you know, I question his temperament as well, but nonetheless, that means that, you know, John McCain's health should be for everybody. I would think probably for conservatives even more than for liberals, progressives, and the so-called middle-of-the-road Americans should be an issue. So Matt Stoller and Dr. Ronald Braunau, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you both for being with us. First, Matt, let me let you just frame the issue very quickly here. To the extent that I didn't do it, tell us what's going on here.
Well, basically, McCain is 72. He's picked a variety of health problems that we know of. He's picked an inexperienced vice presidential candidate, but significantly, he hasn't released his health records. And that's a problem because it doesn't allow the public to make an informed choice about the presidency, because we're really just not sure how likely it is that McCain will survive his first 4 years or 8 years in the White House. And I think he'd be the oldest president. If he were elected, he'd be the oldest president that we've ever had. And so the public...
Well,
really
actually, Reagan was older than 72 in his second term, but he would be the oldest president elected.
Taking office.
Yeah.
So that, you know, the public is really being denied the right to actually know whether our president or potential president is going to survive his term of office.
Dr. Braunau, you're a dermatologist. You practiced dermatology in Los Angeles for 38 years. You received your MD from UCLA. Your credentials are impeccable. And dermatology, you're the guys who deal with things like melanoma, this incredibly deadly skin cancer that John McCain has had, what, four times now, sir?
Yeah, he's had four melanomas, but the one we're worried about is the one that was in the year 2000. Which was a quite large melanoma. And the big argument here is they're arguing over whether this was a level 2 or a level 3 melanoma. And the difference is a level 2 melanoma has a 77% 10-year survival rate, and the level 3 melanoma has a 38% 10-year survival rate. So, I'm sorry, the level 2 has a 64%. So, I mean, under any circumstances, you're kind of playing Russian roulette here. And the problem is that there's differing medical opinions about what stage melanoma you had. The Mayo Clinic said it was a stage 2. Armed Forces Institute of Pathology read the slides and said it's a stage 3. And the difference is tremendous because... it's interesting, when they took out the melanoma, they took a huge margin and they took out 33 lymph nodes. Now, that's generally the treatment for stage 3. And so why did they do such a radical surgery? And it's really important, obviously, to know what his chances of survival are, you know, considering who the next president would be if he dies in office. I mean, as Sarah Palin said, the results could be nuclear.
Yeah, right. Oh my, it would be funny if it wasn't so serious. I read a piece recently, and correct me or inform me about this, that suggested that melanoma that was removed in 2000, that there were also questions about whether it was a primary cancer or a metastasis, a secondary cancer that had derived from a primary cancer, if my use of the word is correct. Can you inform us about those kinds of things?
Yeah, well, I think most people believe that it was a primary cancer, but The Armed Forces Institute of Pathology said in the same slides that the Mayo Clinic reviewed and said that the lesion was highly suggestive of a metastasis of melanoma and may represent a satellite metastasis. That means that within about an inch of the primary tumor, there was another tumor in the lymphatic channels. Now, that would indicate a metastasis and bring it to a stage 3. So that's, I think, the argument. I think that most people believe that the primary tumor was not a recurrence, that it was a primary tumor. But, you know, it was 4/5 of an inch long and 1/10 of an inch deep. That's a big melanoma.
Whoa. Day before yesterday, I believe it was, might have been the day before that, John McCain was on stage. The left side of his face started twitching. His left lip started pulling up. His left eye started drooping down. He immediately ended his speech. He got lost on stage. Somebody had to come up on stage and walk him off the stage, show him which way to get off the stage. There were some folks, over at Huffington Post, there was a blog on this. AmericaBlog.com had the shot-by-shot video broken down. People asking the question, did he just have a micro stroke on stage right in front of us all? Or could that be the consequence of this relatively major surgery that he had on the left side of his face to take out this melanoma?
Well, you know, as a dermatologist, you know, I'm just giving you a non-dermatology medical opinion. But sure. To me, you know, I could say, well, the twitch could certainly be secondary to the extensive surgery. But when you get lost on stage, then you start to wonder where it's something much worse than that.
Yeah, yeah. So I think most Americans, Matt Stoller, think that John McCain has released his medical records. We saw on TV Sanjay Gupta going through them. We saw the video. I mean, you know, I think most Americans think that, you know, everything's cool. What's wrong with that picture, and how do we change it?
Well, you know, they gave 20 reporters 1,173 pages of medical records, and it's my understanding they shuffled them like a deck of cards. They weren't in order.
None of them had page numbers on them, by the way.
Pardon me?
None of them had page numbers on them.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So, in other words...
They had 3 hours.
Yeah, right. And they gave them 3 hours. They couldn't photocopy them. They couldn't consult with outside medical experts. I mean, this is a grave situation when the public doesn't see all of the medical records. And, I mean, that goes for all of the candidates. I mean, Obama, he only released a one-page summary. I think all of the medical records of all of the candidates should be released. That should be par for the course.
Mm-hmm. But what if Obama has never had any serious medical, I mean, all he's ever had in his life is a physical?
Well, so then release the results of the physical.
Yeah, okay. So right across the board, you're saying neither of the candidates are fully released.
Well, you know, I think Obama believes that he did, but it was only a one-page summary, and I think they should release all of his records.
Yeah, yeah. And Dr. Braunau, your thoughts on the relative importance of releasing McCain's records versus Obama's?
Well, the importance, obviously, is much more serious with McCain, because Obama's never had a cancer. He's never had a melanoma. So, I mean, there's no comparison. I mean, McCain had a serious tumor that could kill him. And the argument is, you know, what's his survival? There are some people that say, well, you know, if he's gotten through 5 years, you know, his odds are really good. Well, that's maybe true on a level two, but if it's a stage two, but if it's a stage three, that's another story completely. And I mean, for the commander in chief to have a potentially fatal melanoma, and look, if it recurs, if he has a recurrence or a metastasis, the survival rate is 7 to 19% for 5 years, and the average survival of a metastatic melanoma is 6 to 9 months. And the therapy you'd have to have for that is completely disabling. He wouldn't be able to be in, as a president, he wouldn't be able to make decisions with that kind of chemotherapy.
Thank you very much, sir. Dr. Ronald Braunau, Matt Stoller, the website bravenewfilms.org, and of course over at openleft.com, you can find Matt's blogging. Both of you, thank you so much for dropping by today.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks a lot.
16 minutes past the hour. We will pick up your calls right after this break on Anything Goes Friday. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman, Rachel Maddow, Lionel, and more. Download all of your favorite shows with Air America On Demand. Sign up now at airamerica.com. Now, back to the Tom Hartman Program on airamerica.com.
glimpse of stockings looked on to something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Good. Welcome back to your radio support group, Tom Hartman Radio Program. Downright crazy stuff going on out there in the world, I'm telling you. Well, maybe KFC is. I don't know. Fast food fan Natalie Jackson sat down, a trainee nurse she is, and a pal. They pumped for 14 chicken pieces, 6 bags of fries, 2 large Cokes. Took an hour and a half to chow down all 5,456 calories. And what did she get in the mail as a result of it? A parking ticket. 150-pound, this happened in the UK, 150-pound parking ticket because they exceeded the 75-minute limit in the KFC parking lot. Well, it takes a while to eat 5,456 calories. Sorry, KFC is reviewing the case. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Linda in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Linda, what's up?
Yes, hi, Tom. I want to make 2 comments, if I could. One is about John McCain. With his increasingly erratic behavior and increasingly suspect judgment, I want to know how we can get his mental health records released before the election. I mean, he's showing aspects of PTSD, and he sees enemies everywhere. He says there's going to be other wars. I'm sure he sleeps dreaming and wakes up wanting to bomb somebody. So he's showing himself to be very dishonest. And
I would think his mental health records should be part of his physical, you know, his health records in general.
Right.
After the Vietnam War, there was very, very little mental health follow-up. The best guess is there's still over 100,000 vets, Vietnam War vets, who have never been diagnosed, who are still to this day suffering from PTSD. And he comes from a generation when mental health problems, not to say that they're not still considered a stigma, but hugely were considered a stigma when he was growing up. And so you just didn't talk about such things. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's never been seriously evaluated for mental health problems. So, you know, there may not be any records to see. I mean, we may have to start from scratch with that. But that's a good point that you raised, Linda. Thank you very much. And much appreciated. David in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, David.
Yeah. I need a favor, Tom. Can we stop calling this trillion-dollar travesty a bailout of Wall Street, or, as it's known in its new, more palatable incarnation, a bailout of Main Street? In other words, don't concentrate on the creeps that you despise bailing out. Concentrate on instead on your next-door neighbor whose 401k we're bailing out. That's the new thing. This is not a bailout of Wall Street. It is not a bailout of Main Street. It's a bailout of whatever street runs in front of Capitol Hill. It's a bailout of the guys in that building who should have been minding the store but weren't. Now, I don't know why they weren't, but this is to cover their asses.
You're right, and they weren't because Phil Graham said, okay, we're not going to look at that anymore. I mean, he just changed the rules. Somebody in the chat room was talking about how it's like Monopoly all over again, but at least in Monopoly there's some transparency. Everybody knows what everybody else is doing. Ultimately, you do end up with one person owning everything. That's the goal of Monopoly, and that's the goal of Monopoly capitalism, and that's the direction that we're going. I'm going to stay with the word bailout, frankly, because that's, you know, to the extent that that's a distasteful word for most Americans, I think that's a good one. Pete in Seattle. Hey, Pete.
Hey. Tom, are you familiar with smart drugs?
Yes, I am.
I believe that Sarah Palin was on vasopressin or something like it last night. She had all the telltale signs.
How so?
Eyes were kind of glossy and had that red sheen to them. She had the rapid speech. She was turning pages in her mind, and she was riffing on George and Ronnie, and it just seemed to me that it
even
was
just a little bit of Ritalin could have done that. But for that matter, a little bit of caffeine could have done. Pete, if you go back and you look at her, actually a lot of adrenaline could have done that too, which I'm sure she was experiencing. If you go back and you look at her debates in Alaska, and that video is all over YouTube. It's easy to find. The woman is actually a good debater. And I think last night she did what she always does. When she doesn't know the answer, she changes the subject, or she gives a glittering generality, to quote one of her former debating opponents. And when she does know the answer, she actually presents it fairly well. By not going down in flames, here's my take. Thanks, Pete, for pointing that out. By not going down in flames, what Sarah Palin did was she stopped the bleeding. She stopped the hemorrhaging of the McCain campaign. The McCain campaign has been you know, sliding into oblivion as a consequence, in large part, of Tina Fey. I'd say Tina Fey and Saturday Night Live, and Katie Couric. I mean, you know, the reality of Katie Couric, and then but see, most people, most Americans don't even watch the reality of Katie Couric. What they do is they see the Tina Fey part, and that has been really, really, really hurting. And so I would say, at a certain level, she accomplished the same thing that Barack Obama did in the presidential campaign, and I think, therefore, over the next 2 days, you're going to see a similar rise in the polls for the McCain-Palin ticket. Because Obama, most Americans didn't know much about Obama and hadn't paid much attention to him until the last debate. Many Americans, you know, people who are just, you know, watching sports and whatnot. And they watched Obama debate McCain, and they realized, this is a serious guy. This is a guy who can string together a coherent sentence. This is a guy who actually understands the issues. And they could imagine him as president. Last night, she came across as somebody who was not the bumbling, incompetent, empty-headed whatever that she has been characterized over the last 2 weeks as in the media. I don't think, frankly, she didn't come across as the kind of person I want as president, but at least she didn't come across as a dick.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270. Fresh opinions and news you can use. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com.
Well, I would say that what Bernie Sanders predicted 2 weeks ago has happened. The majority, apparently, we're still getting the details here, but it looks like the majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives have voted against the bailout bill, but a significant enough minority of Republicans have joined the majority of the Democrats that we now have the George Bush, Hank Paulson, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid bailout. And you tell me how and why that's going to be a good thing for the Democratic Party. I don't get it. I think it's going to be a disaster for the Democratic Party. Last night, traveling through the airport, I watched the Lou Dobbs show. It's amazing how vitriolic the guy is getting. But anyway, so on it goes. On it goes. 866-303-2270. Anything goes Friday. Doug in Everett, Washington. Hey, Doug.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Just fine. If you're on a speakerphone, Doug, if you could pick up the phone, it'd be great.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about the upcoming economic collapse. I think that this bill is not going to do anything to prevent it.
No, it's going to buy about 4 weeks, which is all the Republicans need to get to the election.
Exactly, and then after that, what Naomi Klein was talking about yesterday is, you know, the upcoming...
Naomi Wolf.
Wolf. She's talking about the upcoming revolution. Well, that's going to have to happen. I mean, the economic collapse is going to happen first before we can have any changes, because it's going to have to get really bad before it gets any better.
Yeah. Let's remember, though, that the revolution, in quotes, of the 1930s happened, setting aside the Bonus Army, happened by and large without people engaging in civil disobedience, without people breaking the law, without people going out into the streets. It happened as a result of good old-fashioned political pressure. I understand Naomi Wolf's position I'm not quite there. I'm sorry. I'm not ready to say we need to shut down institutions. In fact, I think it would be counterproductive. I think it would turn most average Americans against us, and or against change. We don't need to reinvent the '60s, and we don't need to reinvent SDS. Of which I was a member. I don't know, arguably still am. But I think instead what we need to be doing is organizing political activity right across the board and infiltrate and take over these political parties. So I'm not as far down that road as Naomi is. Now, she's convinced that we have already had a coup and that we already are a fascist state. I think that all the trappings are in place. The infrastructure is there and the superstructure is there. And if this election is stolen and McCain, Palin become president, that her scenario has a very good probability of becoming real. At which time, if that happens, I may change my opinion on some of these issues. But by and large, I think what we need to do, as Bernie said, is we need to get as many people as possible to make sure that they're registered to vote. This is the last week in many, many states to register to vote. And get out there and vote. Participate. It's time to participate. Eddie in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Eddie.
Hey, how you doing?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Oh, I just thought you'd find this interesting. Miss Palin's accent is not real.
It's a Minnesota accent, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, and the there's a reporter that's been on John Elliott's show every night,
mm-hmm.
and she's from Wasilla. And
yeah, that's Cece. She's been on our show a couple times, too.
Yeah, and she's like, last night, which is like, and what's up with that accent? She never has an accent at home.
Interesting. George W., very interesting point, Eddie. Thank you very much for pointing it out. You know, George W. Bush was born in Connecticut, grew up in Connecticut, spent his summers in Maine, went to prep schools in Connecticut and Massachusetts, went to college in Massachusetts, spent most of the time that he was in the military drunk in Alabama. Where did he get his Texas accent? Well, Jim Moore, the guy who wrote Bush's Brain, who's a native Texan, would be the first to tell, or Paul Begala, for that matter, will be the first to point out to you that Bush's accent isn't a true Texan accent either. So apparently having an accent helps with the good old boy, you know, yeah, I'm a good old boy, or in her case, a good old girl or whatever. Mark in Santa Fe. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Hey, I'm a 24/7 devotee of Air America and especially your program. I heard a report yesterday on the Kuby show that I just put me into disbelief, and then eventually I accepted it. You know, and what it did, it made me realize that we can make this bailout a trickle up instead of a trickle down.
How?
Most pundits scoff at that, you know, and I'm a DOM, I'm not an economist, but it showed that in the streets of Baghdad, that everything was completely different. And again, I listen to Air America 24/7, so I had a hard time believing it, but the transformation that took place in Baghdad was because of a trickle up. They give these guys, who were former insurgents, blowing up Humvees, $150 a month.
Yeah, it started out at 100 a month. Yeah, absolutely, which is big money.
Isn't that the same thing? We give them money.
That's right.
And we tell the bankers, we tell Congress, why don't we try this trickle up? And they say, no, it can't work. It's got to be trickle down. What do you think?
Yeah. No, absolutely. The problem is that the bailout bill that just passed the House of Representatives and will go to the president and be signed gives nothing to you and me. It is not a trickle-up program. It's a total trickle-down. But you're absolutely right. In Baghdad, trickle-up is what's working. And all across the world, it's what works. You want an anti-terrorism program? Start building schools and hospitals and employing doctors and teachers. Start building infrastructure in some of these countries. So, help them from the bottom up rather than stop giving $100 billion or multi-hundred-million-dollar loans to the presidents and the administrations of countries. Get rid of the World Bank and the IMF and start doing it right to the people. And you will see transformation all across the world. Patricia in Wisconsin. Hey, Patricia.
Priscilla.
Oh, Priscilla. I'm sorry.
Hey, I'm glad that caller was before me because I can add to this to his comment.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly what I'm talking about. Why don't we take 1 month's worth of what we pay, you know, for the war, $10 billion, give it to every single taxpayer, which would equal perhaps $400,000 apiece.
No, it wouldn't. It would. Wait a second. Just a second, Priscilla. If you took $10 billion and divided it among 100 million taxpayers, you would have, if my math is right, about $100 a person.
Oh.
Maybe $1,000. I'm lousy with math. I'm sorry, but I know, you know, right
you
now.
You mean Americans or taxpayers?
See, there's this viral email going around saying, if you just divided up the billions of dollars that they're passing out, it's enough to give every American hundreds of thousands of dollars. The math is wrong. The $700 billion bailout works out to $4,700 per taxpayer in the United States. It's about 100 million taxpayers, 112 million taxpayers.
Uh-huh.
And on a per-person basis, it works out to a little over $2,000 a person. That's the $700 billion. So if you're only going to take $10 billion and divide it up, you're talking about $50 or something like that going to every person.
Well, I didn't mean every person. I meant every taxpayer. So if
same
it's
thing.
40,
I mean, you know, it's
40,000 or 4,000?
4,000.
Oh.
$4,000.
Okay. Bad idea. Maybe we could take 6 months' worth of the war in Iraq money and
That would only be $300 billion, and that would be about $2,000, a little over $2,000 per taxpayer. The problem is that just giving money to people isn't the solution. I mean, that's what they did back 4 months ago. That was their stimulus idea. Let's give everybody $300.
Well,
that's not the solution. What people need are good jobs, and we need to be making things in this country again as a consequence of those good jobs. And until we start making things, which means changing our trade policies, and we start and massively changing our trade policies and changing our tax policies so that companies cannot keep their profits offshore, and we start breaking up these too big to fail companies, these huge companies, we're not going to get out of this hole until we start making things in the United States and start giving people good salaries. Because the only thing that will drive an economy is people buying things. Average people, the hundreds of millions of average people in America going out there and buying things. And it's not enough to just have a few, you know, wealthy people buy yachts. Doesn't work. But good try, Priscilla. Ed in Hillsboro, Oregon. Hey, Ed, got a minute before the break.
You know, it occurs to me that it's not really a rescue if the only thing we're doing is bailing. You know, you can bail out a sinking ship, but unless you fix the hole,
it's still sinking. Right.
You know, and it's the thing that reminds me of the Titanic. You know, it's like we're buying a little bit of time for the first-class passengers to hog up the lifeboats. And meanwhile, all the middle-class passengers are down in steerage drowning in the rising waters of subprime loans. And so
that is exactly what's happening.
Yeah, it's you know, the thing is that the way you fix the hole is by putting some New Deal regulations back in place. Nobody's talking about that in Washington, except maybe Bernie Sanders. And, you know, the other thing is that we need to do something about, you know, getting those mom-and-pop homeowners out of steerage and getting them up on deck so they can get some lifeboats.
Yep. Amen. Very well said, Ed. Thank you. Michael Moore came out with a 10-point program, which included my suggestion for a 0.25% tax on stock trades. And it's actually, I think, one of the best programs I've seen. You can read it, I'm sure, over at michaelmoore.com. Who would have thunk, right? Michael Moore is a very, very smart guy. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com.
Battle to the street. But when
Welcome back to the real free speech zone. The Tom Hartman program. Hey, let me correct myself. I said a moment ago that the Republicans, that the majority of the Republicans voted against this. Actually, yeah. Here's the New York Times. The crucial vote was 263 to 171. Most Democrats voted in favor, 172 yeas to 63 nays, while a slighter majority of Republicans voted against. No, I was right in the first place. 91 yeas to 108 nays. So the Republicans in the House of Representatives, I'd have to go back and look at the Senate, but the Republicans in the House of Representatives will be able to continue to say, we, the majority of us, oppose this. Just like Democrats in the House of Representatives to this day like to point out that the majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives voted against giving Bush authorization for Iraq. So this has become the Pelosi, Reid, Bush bailout of Goldman Sachs. Don and Eugene. Hey, Don. Don, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hey, you're missing all the rain up here in Oregon.
Oh, I'm heartbroken, Don.
My dad, like John McCain, is a retired military person with PTSD in his 70s. And I think I have an insight as to why it might not have been noticed in John McCain, or why he might not be pursuing it. My dad didn't realize he had PTSD until he discovered the Internet and he got online. And the reason is because he, like John McCain, wasn't in his 20s and wasn't a grunt during the war. Those guys that were in their 20s and they came back, they knew what had happened to them, and they're a much stronger, much more cohesive group of vets. And so when they started discovering the idea of PTSD and agitating to get the VA to acknowledge it, they were a lot more successful. My dad was an advisor to an engineer battalion. He was a captain. He was the southernmost station advisor in Vietnam in 68. And like John McCain, he was in his 30s. He was an officer. And because of that, there's kind of more of a... my dad felt guilty about even pursuing the idea of looking at whether he had PTSD.
Right.
Because he was in what would be described as light combat, as if getting shot at a
right.
few times.
Officers don't get PTSD.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and although John McCain, I mean, as a prisoner of war, certainly you'd think that there would be PTSD associated with that, if nothing else.
Well, the PTSD, the moment the bullet hit the plane that he was in, John McCain had PTSD, okay?
Yeah.
My dad, I never even noticed with my dad. He said, you get a bunch of Vietnam vets together in a restaurant, and they're all fighting for the seats that face the door at the table, because none of them want to have their backs to the door at a restaurant. I never noticed that about my dad for 30 years, and all of a sudden I was like, holy cow, you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I just want to make a plug for neurobiofeedback as something that could really help a lot of vets out there. I'm doing a lens technique for my ADD, and I've been doing lens for about a month and a half, and it's phenomenal. You know, I know you promote neurobiofeedback a lot, and I wish every vet knew about it because it's remarkable.
Yeah,
so I would say there's the guilt issue, though. The guilt issue, and you know, I mean, John McCain was at Annapolis. You know, it's not macho to show that you had PTSD. So.
Yeah, I think that's the bottom line, Don. Is that generational thing? Thanks for pointing that out. And there's some great neurofeedback folks in Portland. Nora Gagaudis in particular. Kevin in Miami, Florida. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good. What's
now,
up?
I have to preface my statement because I thought Palin was lousy last night, but...
I didn't think she was all that great. She just didn't look like Tina Fey. I mean, she wasn't...
I like the wink stuff.
Yeah, right.
But my point is, I had a fourth-level melanoma in February 2000, which has put my wife through pure hell, because you never know what's going to happen. And I think that what worries me is mine... After they go through radioactive isotopes, which is the most painful part of the whole procedure, where they shoot the isotopes right into the melanoma. And that tracks out where it's going. Mine didn't happen to hit my lymph nodes, thank God.
Yeah.
But what's happening with this whole melanoma thing, and, you know, God, I love you, Tom, but I don't think there's enough information going out right now about people like me.
Yeah,
now,
well,
I'm
this
an
is
an 8-year survivor.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
So is John McCain right now, and that's the scary thing. I mean, that's why we had that physician on at the top of the hour. This is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
This is
absolutely. But mine never hit the lymph nodes,
and his did. Which means that his was as bad or worse than yours, or something.
Right. I mean, even a first level melanoma, if it gets down into your underarm, where the lymph nodes are.
Yeah. Yeah. This is.
You.
Yeah. No. It's very serious stuff. Kevin, thanks for sharing that with us. I got to move along here. Glenn in Lakeport, California. Hey, Glenn. Got a minute before the show wraps up, or this hour anyway wraps up. What's
up?
Hey,
Tom. Just a couple of quick comments. One is, I haven't heard anybody say this, but I think the whole bailout thing is just a last gasp grab of getting money for all the people that have benefited from all the Bush policies over the last 8 years.
What I have said two or three times here, Glenn, is that this is George Bush stealing the china and the silver on his way out of the White House.
Yeah. And the other take I have is about the debate last night. I listened to it on the POTUS channel because I don't have TV. And at the end of the debate, the commentator people came on. They all basically called it a tie. Mm-hmm. And then the guy came on that was running an internet and text messaging survey of Dems, Republicans, and Independents. And he basically showed that it was like 70-30 in favor of Biden, and they all just kind of sat there dumbfounded.
Yeah, no, and that's, I think, broadly speaking, all of the focus groups outside of the one at Fox News where they were being carefully coached by Frank Luntz, which was also going on in the airport lounge that I was in, all of the focus groups are saying, yeah, Joe Biden walked away from this thing. He did great. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Six minutes past the hour on your radio support group for We the People of the United States of America. 866-303-2270, our telephone number here on Anything Goes Friday. The House has caved in. The Senate has caved in. Henry Paulson put a gun to his head and said, get any closer and I'll shoot the white guy. I'll shoot the millionaire. They said, oh, no, we can't have that. We can't have any dead millionaires. No, no. Bush comes out and he says, you guys get any closer, I'll shoot the middle class. That's what he was doing. He was threatening all of us. Of course, George W. Bush always threatens all of us. I mean, that's he's a one-trick pony. That's all he does. So anyhow, 263 to 171 it passed in the House. Most of the Democrats voted yes. Most of the Republicans voted no. And I guarantee you, over the next 4 weeks, you are going to hear about how most of the Republicans voted no over and over and over, because this is one of those kind of no-win things. If it doesn't prevent the disaster, then the Democrats will be blamed for voting for it, because it didn't prevent the disaster. If it does prevent the disaster, the Democrats will be blamed for voting for it. Or let me rephrase that. The Republicans will praise themselves for voting against it, because they'll say, see, there was no disaster. We didn't need this thing. So there you go. The politics of this are so obvious, so transparent. Why is it always that, you know, 5, 6, 8 weeks before an election, George Bush comes out and goes, oh, my God, look out, look out, look out, the Iraqis are coming. Saddam Hussein has unmanned aerial vehicles that can disperse chemical and biological agents over the United States. We've got to stop him. Or we've got to pass the Patriot Act. You know, it's got to be done immediately. And well, on it goes. You know the list. 866-303-2270, your phone number. Ray in Vancouver. Hey, Ray.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to say I was checking my news reader today, and I noticed that even though Palin and McCain might have a breath here, it seems that in Alaska, a judge has said that the investigation for Troopergate may continue, and that her aides and Todd Palin must obey the subpoenas. So that just opens up another can of worms for McCain. And I personally think I warned other people about Palin and warned them that McCain periodically does what we call strategically a withdrawal. He does a military withdrawal where he regroups. And I think the Obama team need to pick up on this Troopergate thing and go, well, they call Straight Talk Express. What's the problem? Why hide? Come out. Get the investigation done.
Except that the Obama campaign has made the decision, right or wrong. We'll find out November 5th or the night of November 4th. Right or wrong, they've made the decision that they're not going to play, at least at a high level in a large way, they're not going to play gotcha politics. They're not going to go after these guys. I think that it may be a mistake, but, you know, time will tell. We'll see. But at that level, I don't think that you're going to see the gotchas. I think they're going to keep them to policy. And so we'll see how it plays out. Thanks a lot for the call, Ray. You know, by the way, speaking of policy, let me just toss this in here, and then we'll go to the next call. In the United States, people vote based on their gut instinct, 80-90%, based on policies and issues, 10-20%. If you can translate those policies and issues into emotional stuff, then you can win. But that's damn hard to do. Most people would rather know that the person who is president is somebody that they trust than that it is somebody that they know knows the answer, but they don't trust. So if you want to campaign for somebody, if you want somebody to win, you praise them as a person. You don't talk about their policy issues. And I say that in the context of pay attention to what Bill Clinton did yesterday, or was it the day before, down in Florida, talking about how John McCain's a good man, but Barack Obama knows the issues. He's right on the issues. And that's a great way to get John McCain elected president, and Bill Clinton knows it. Steve in Sparta, Michigan. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, Tom?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. This is Steve from Sparta.
Hey, long story, but there used to be an airport in Sparta that I used to hang out at a lot years ago.
Okay. Yeah, they do have a little dinky one here, but the big one is Kent County International, of course.
Yeah.
But
used to be owned by the Norton family.
Yeah, yeah. I recently got back from Russia. I was there for 6 months. And so I apologize I didn't get a chance to talk to you earlier about the Georgia-Russia conflict, but I'd like to make a couple observations, if I may.
Sure. Yeah. My what I was hearing in all the Russian media, by the way, was that the Russians were very, very up to date on the fact that this all began when Saakashvili started dropping bombs on Svengali, not when the Russians rolled their tanks into Georgia.
Well, you know, I tell you what, you know, I was really, really blind to what really went on until I got home. The Russian media basically, well, obviously, they portrayed, they get all their information from their government. It's a government-controlled media. It's not a free media at all. And I found that out when I got home because, you know, everything that they were saying was the blame on Georgia, that they attacked, that Georgia had attacked, you know, South Ossetia. They were killing, what they said at the time, thousands of people, innocent people, blasting them in the back and shooting them in the head, killing babies, blah, blah, blah. And so the
Russians... the reality is, Steve, that Saakashvili, Georgia, started dropping bombs in the middle of the night while Bush and Putin were both off at the Olympics in Svengali, the capital city of South Ossetia. And it was the next day that Russia said, no, you can't do this anymore, and rolled into, took over South Ossetia and then rolled into Georgia.
Well,
and that is a reality.
That's a reality, and that's basically...
Now, they exaggerated how bad the damage was being done in Svengali, and we exaggerated how bad the damage was being done by them, frankly, in my opinion.
Well, what I've heard, you know, from a lot of the media sources that I've read when I came back, it's like, you know, who started what first is really, really up in the air. There was sporadic fighting between the Ossetian militias and Georgia for a few days preceding Russia.
There has been for a few years.
I'm sorry?
There has been for a few years.
Yeah. Well, it had escalated. And, and those Syrian forces were under the control of the Russian military. And, you know, who's to say that they weren't prompted to do this and Russia was not, or Georgia was not set up to slap back. And when they slap back, that's when they got hit. And they got hit hard. And, you know, I think it's...
If they were slapping back, though, on Russians who were on the border between South Ossetia and Georgia, why did they slap back by dropping bombs on civilian areas in the capital city?
Well, they, by that time, there was intercepted messages. You may have read this in the New York Times and some other sources. Russia tanks had already gone into Georgia proper.
Mm-hmm.
And that right there is a declaration of war. And there had already been fighting.
I think it's the other way around. I think the Russian tanks came in after Saakashvili started dropping his bombs in
that depends on who you believe on this one.
Yeah, well, I you
because
know,
the, you've read about the intercepted radio messages from the South Ossetian commanders, right?
Oh yeah, I've read a whole bunch of stuff on both sides, and the BBC seems to have it the cleanest actually, but and which causes me to think that this thing was provoked by Saakashvili. But you know, also the other thing that stinks about this is that Randy Shuneman, who was John McCain's chief foreign policy advisor, had taken $700,000 from Saakashvili, and that Karl Rove, 3 weeks before this happened, was in that region at a meeting with Saakashvili.
Right.
Now, if McCain wanted to shift, and McCain was going down in the polls, and by shifting, and Iraq was kind of off the radar screen. So if he could restart the Cold War, if he could restart a conflict between us and Russia, that's ground upon which he has stood for 30 years. And it's ground upon which Barack Obama has no standing. He has no history. And so it's, you know, what I smelled, and I, you know, maybe I'm being paranoid here, but what I smelled was a coordination between the McCain campaign and Shuneman and Rove and Saakashvili. And keep in mind, Saakashvili is no small D Democrat. This is a guy who put his political opponents in prison, who took over a TV station during the election, who has been accused of rigging the vote. I think, frankly, that this was done to help McCain. And that's the claim that the Russians were making. Buddy.
Yeah, Putin was making that same one.
Yeah, he was just coming right out and saying it. And nobody on our side ever tried to seriously rebut it, other than to simply say it's ridiculous. So, Steve, I think that there's plenty of blame to go around, but there's something about this really smells. Thanks for the call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocky was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes. Gloves, toes, and
Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, where we're broadcasting from Progressive Talk AM 1340 KPTR in Palm Springs, California. I will be speaking at the AGNT.org conference tonight, keynoting the conference, and doing a workshop there tomorrow. And very pleased to be here in the desert where it's just so beautiful and so comfortable. Michelle in San Diego, another great town. Hey, Michelle, what's up?
Well, I was calling. I'm so nervous. I came to see you when you were in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
We lost our Air America station, which is really disturbing, but I listened to you on the computer on the Zona station.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just so frustrated. In fact, I was up all night thinking about things. But basically, my husband worked 31 years for U.S. Airways. You know, and paid the maximum amount of taxes, of course, because they take them out of the... We lived very frugally, had five kids, put four of them through college without debt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was about 2 weeks before he retired, which is mandatory at age 60, FAA rules. You know, 9/11 hit.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and the airline went bust and took his retirement.
You're kidding.
And so, pardon
his,
me?
His pension went with it?
Pardon me?
His pension went away when US Air...
Yeah, US Air went bankrupt.
I didn't realize that that hit the pensions as well. That's terrible.
Oh, yeah. And so they took his pension and put it in the government, the PG, whatever.
Right.
You know, and it's about maybe 30% of what he would have received and what we had planned on.
Right.
You know, we don't live in a mansion, and luckily, you know, we lived within our means.
Mm-hmm.
But the money that we did have, we invested, and half of that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought a business, a small business, that turns a real small profit. You know, we pay workers' comp. We don't hire illegal aliens. We do everything honest. And we had a short-term loan.
Oop, we lost you. I think your cell phone died. I'm sorry. I'm not sure exactly where you were going with that story, but it was you had me. Give us a call back, and if you can get through. I know all the lines are typically slammed. But Mark in Stratford, Connecticut. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for the service that you provide for us.
You're welcome. Please pick up your phone.
I would like you to convince me
Mark,
that...
Mark, if you could take us off speakerphone, I'd appreciate it.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
I would like you to convince me and the other listeners that we're not in the final stages of a silent coup where these guys, the Wall Street guys and the leaders of our country, you know, they've gotten what they need, and they've kind of won the game. They're in a no-lose situation whether or not Barack gets elected, whether or not the country turns around. They've got their money, and... especially in light of the October 1st deployment of the NORCOM forces from Iraq that are sent here to supposedly maintain order. These guys are not trained to fill sandbags to help out in Galveston. These guys are trained to put down urban insurrections.
Right.
So I'd just like to hear your thoughts on all that.
I think that, Mark, there's a small possibility, and it's hard to assign a percentage to it, but certainly well under 50, probably under 30, that we are actually in the end stages of a coup here in the United States, that the fascists have taken over, I think, or are in the very process of nailing down the very last pieces of it. And I frankly, in that context, I see the bankruptcy bill as part of that. It further impoverishes the United States. It's more, you know, David Stockman, Grover Norquist, Ronald Reagan type of economics to drive the middle class into such poverty that they will not be able to protest. On the other hand, I also think that we've been there before. I think that we were very close to that in 1931.
Right.
I think that we were very close to that in the 1850s. And frankly, actually, even in the late 1890s, we had a very, very serious recession. Some would argue a depression in either 1896 or 1897. And, you know, there was a lot of concern that there may be another American Revolution at that time. I don't think that we've gone, I don't think we've crossed the line, Mark. I think we're just too damn close to it for comfort. And that's why we need so many Americans to get politically active, to be participating in the process, to sign up with democracyforamerica.com for a training on how to be politically active, to go to the local Democratic or Green Party headquarters and say, I'm here, I want to volunteer, I want to go knock on doors, I want to participate. Frankly, even for those people who are inclined to be Republicans and yet still have some common sense about them, I mean, you go back, and as I was reading on Thursday from the newspapers, I guess it was Tuesday this week, I was reading from the newspapers from the New York Times from the 1920s and the early 1930s, there were progressive Republicans who were joining with the progressive Democrats. And so I think that, you know, even those people who are inclined to be Republicans need to take back the Republican Party. I mean, you know, this is pretty straightforward stuff. There's a small, bottom line, there's a small band of crazies who are doing this. And it's a small and very wealthy band of crazies. But we can't discount them just because of that, because it was a small band of wealthy crazies that took over Germany in the 30s, too.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Fresh opinions and news you can use. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com.
That's called democracy.
And everybody's got a cross they can claim.
34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Chris, we've got some Sarah Palin clips there. You've got the one on her talking about executive power, as I recall. Can you play that?
Governor, you said in July that you would have to, someone would have to explain to you exactly what it is the vice president does every day. You, Senator, said you would not be vice president under any circumstances. Now, maybe this was just what was going on at the time. But tell us now, looking forward, what it is that you think the vice presidency is worth now.
Okay, in my comment there, it was a lame attempt at a joke, and yours was a lame attempt at a joke, too, I guess, because nobody got it. Of course we know what a vice president does.
You didn't get yours or mine.
Either.
Which one
didn't
I get?
No. No, of course, we know what a vice president does, and that's not only preside over the Senate, and we'll take that position very seriously also. I'm thankful that the Constitution would allow a bit more authority given to the vice president.
Yeah, a bit more authority given to the vice president? A bit more authority given to the vice president? At this point, all of America should be shuddering. Sarah Palin basically had nothing but memorized sound bites last night. She demonstrated no in-depth understanding of any of these issues, memorized sound bites. The good news from their point of view is that she didn't bumble, she didn't wander, she didn't stumble, she didn't act totally and hopelessly left, you know, confused. But Joe Biden did a brilliant job last night. He really did a brilliant job. Good on you, Joe. Ellie in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Ellie, what's on your mind?
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air.
Okay, it's Elle.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's fine. I wasn't sure you were talking to me, though. And I'd like to be clear and concise, but I have to tell you the truth. I'm a bit nervous, so I hope you'll bear with me. I'm a professor in the social sciences, and I called because I disagreed with Naomi Wolf yesterday about what to do if the election was stolen again.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't call yesterday because I was running off to class. But I'm going to take a deep breath and try to get my say out.
Yeah, her take, basically, for those people who weren't listening, and these are my words, not hers, but was basically that people should engage in civil disobedience and shut down the country. And I personally will not go that far. I don't think that that's going to help, frankly.
Well,
I think it might hurt.
I'd like to talk about something that I think is necessary in terms of helping. And I think it's patriots like yourself and some of the others who have the public's ear, Rachel Maddow, Randy Rhodes, Keith Olbermann, who could come together and, if you will, give us an intervention for America. And so, I mean, I know you've gone to Darfur and you've done all sorts of wonderful things. But I think we need now for persons like yourself to start talking about, if we wake up on November 5th and the election has been stolen, this is what we're going to do.
Right.
And what I think we need to do, Naomi was talking about wearing riot gear and helmets and hunting vests, and that way you're protected from the police and, of course, the soldiers who are now actively on duty stationed here in America. I don't think we can do that. Will look like the anarchists that they're portraying us as.
Yes.
But we have to be ready right now and let everyone know and get the word out. November 5th, if we think the election's been stolen, and I expect it to be, and that's because we've got voter suppression out the wazoo.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the fact that right now there's all sorts of individuals being intimidated and taken off of the voting list. Even if we have exit polls that show that Obama won by a landslide, they're going to talk about the Bradley effect. While people went into the voting booth and in the end couldn't vote for the black guy.
Yeah, this from the Philadelphia Daily News, by the way. With just weeks to go before the presidential election, voter intimidation has reared its ugly head. An anonymous flyer circulating in African-American neighborhoods in North and West Philadelphia states that voters who are facing outstanding arrest warrants or who have unpaid traffic tickets will be arrested at the polls on Election Day.
Right. And so you could have a 12% difference in the exit polls, and they can still flip it. And there's that wonderful testimony by Steven Schunemeyer talking right. about how they can flip it, how they know they can flip it.
Right.
Long to short, we know the election's going to get stolen. So what I think, the Democratic Party can't do it, and the Democratic candidates can't do it because they look like they were bad losers. Right now, I think the likes of you and others need to be talking to the American people saying, come up November 5th, if this doesn't fare with the exit polls, we need to take to the streets, and it needs to be grandmothers and grandfathers. It needs to be moms and kids. It needs to be everyone peaceful. And I know they're going to have infiltrators in there to try to start trouble.
Yeah.
And we need to take care of them amongst ourselves.
I think we need to do it in a Gandhian fashion.
Exactly. And we need to have signs, holding up signs saying, please, world, help us.
Right.
And we need to have signs held up to the army saying, you know we're fighting for freedom. Come join us.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
need to do it peacefully, just like, was it Belarus that came out in numbers, hundreds of thousands of people?
Mm-hmm. Although Belarus is still a dictatorship.
Where was it that they nullified the election?
I think you're thinking about the Ukraine.
Ukraine.
The Orange Revolution, yeah.
And we need to do that. And the longer we wait, if we don't do this November 5th, the longer we wait, the more accepted the McCain coup will be.
Yeah.
We should have done this in 2000. We should have done it in 2004, but no one believed it could happen here. And it can't happen unless persons like you who have the public's ear, and maybe you need to talk with Rachel and Randy and Keith and everyone else, and you all need to be on the same page saying the same thing. And we can say, look, if the exit polls match what we see happening on the results, we'll give you the election. We'll say, thank God, go for it. But if not, we're going to be out there.
Right. And we're going to be out there in a nonviolent way. We're simply going to be standing on the street, on the streets all across the United States, holding up signs or just simply standing there. I mean, the women
We've
in black, I think, are a great example.
In every single city, people
yes.
who are on Air America channels like yourself need to be organizing this. Because in 2004, I pulled into my parking space at the university. And I was listening, 2004, I was listening to the results November 5th, and there were four of us in a line just sitting there not turning off our radio in disbelief. And we came out of our cars and we said, what do we do? Where do we go?
Right.
There was no place.
Well, the problem that we had, you know, I was on the air at that time. I mean, we've been doing this show for 6 years now. And I spent 2 weeks doing psychotherapy on the air. I mean, I had people calling who were literally talking about suicide. And you know, we were talking people down. And the problem was that John Kerry had... In opposition to his running mate, John Edwards, who wanted to contest Ohio and who wanted to have Ohio audited, John Kerry just rolled over and said, okay.
Here's the thing. I also thought about that, Tom. And what I'm thinking is, if we start talking about this, A, it's going to curb their possibility of doing it. They may still do it, but if they know hundreds of thousands of people are planning to protest... Mm-hmm. And show the world.
It will happen, Elle. We don't, you know, whether... I'm absolutely with you. But
the other thing I wanted to say, Tom, is if we do this ahead of time, it says to Barack, we've got your back. Stand
yeah.
tall. We're
yeah.
here. You be yeah. here for us. And I think he's got enough integrity and enough backbone to do it.
I agree.
He's got to know ahead of time. Now, I don't have a voice. I don't have a platform. I can tell my students and I can tell my friends. But, you know, the 27 of us are not going to make a difference.
But, see, there's a lot of 27 of you out there, Elle.
No.
It's not just the people listening. No, yes, it's not
You've
just the people listening.
You've got the platform.
Elle, there are probably somewhere between 3 and 4 million people who listen to this program. There's roughly the same number of people who listen to Ed Schultz's show, Randy Rhodes' show, and Stephanie Miller's show. And there's an awful lot of overlap. We may have a total of 6 million people in the United States who are listening to Progressive Talk Radio and Rachel Maddow's show at any given time. And that's not... I mean, that's enough to make something happen, but that's not the whole country. I see this as something that has to be happening at the level of the grassroots that is being organized right now, this 50-state strategy by Barack Obama in the Democratic Party, and should be coming out of the Democratic Party. Certainly, you know, I'll be on record right now, and we'll continue to talk about it, that if this election is stolen, this time we need to yell loud and raise hell. But and raise hell in ways that do not produce violence. Absolutely.
I agree with you, and I agree about the importance of the grassroots. But I think we need to be planning right now for November 5th. And we can even say, if the election goes the way the exit polls show, then we're just in the streets to celebrate.
Well, could be.
But I think that unless people have something that's out there that they know they can do, it will be like, again, 2004, where the four of us lined up in our cars and just got out in shock and said, what can we do now?
Yeah. Keep in mind, in 2000, Al Gore fought that thing all the way to the Supreme Court. He absolutely fought it all the way to the Supreme Court. I sat with Al Gore in Portland when he came to give his presentation on global warming and talked with him, you know, privately about this. And he said once the Supreme Court had ruled, and he said this in public as well, once the Supreme Court has ruled, the only other thing was violent revolution, and he was unwilling to do that. But he fought that all the way to the Supreme Court. John Kerry did not. John Kerry simply pulled the plug 24 hours later, and it was a terrible, terrible thing that John Kerry did. And I don't believe that Barack Obama is going to do that. I believe that Barack Obama's got a spine. And we the people of the United States, and I'm not just talking about Progressive Talk Radio listeners, frankly. I think right across the United States, there's a huge movement of people who live in cities they've never even heard of Progressive Talk Radio, because there are a lot of markets that don't have Progressive Talk Radio on it, who are equally concerned, shall we say, and will turn out. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. This is your home for Progressive Talk. AirAmerica.com.
I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, no matter how bad it gets, every day you wake up breathing is another good day. Thanks so much to Louise Harbin, to my producer Sean Taylor, to Chris Rosen, Lauren Kirshner, and Marcus Hillman at Air America, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, especially today to KPTR, Progressive Talk AM 1340, who's loaned me a studio for the day, to our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Bob Ney on the line, former Congressman Bob Ney, who has reincarnated himself as a newsman for the Talk Radio News Service. Do I get that right, Bob?
Ellen reincarnated me.
I see.
The phoenix, and put it back together.
That's remarkable. That's great. So from I this is a fascinating opportunity, actually, although you were on the other side of the political spectrum from me for a long, long time. You must have some tremendous insights into how Congress works. What's your take on what happened this morning?
Yeah, and I used to, you know, fight with the White House with the best of them. I'm talking about fighting with Bush more than the other. It takes easy. I mean, at the end of the day, there was some things added to this, and the mental health parity, which I happen to be for, but, you know, it's not germane to the bill, some disaster relief, et cetera. That pulled some votes, but, you know, Barack Obama, John McCain are both, pushing for votes. I think Barack Obama helped in a lot of ways, and, the pressure. It was just, you know, mainly the pressure. The Senate, frankly, though, Tom, at the end of the day, the Senate played the Trump card. They laid it all on the table and put Speaker Pelosi in a position that they had to have this vote, really. Mm-hmm. And the bill can be considered a disaster. But frankly, Tom, there's, I think, a big, big other side to this thing. The big question now remains, who do you think best can protect the people from the fat cats of Wall Street in a new administration, John McCain or Barack Obama?
Right,
and so I think this is a plus for Obama, frankly, is what I see. And I think some of the Republicans on the Hill, from what I know, are worried about that.
Yeah, well, John McCain has over 100 lobbyists associated with his campaign. His campaign is being run by Rick Davis, who was the you know, a lobbyist for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac right up until 4 weeks ago. You know, it's, yeah, that, I would think that the Obama campaign would start using that stuff.
I think it's very legitimate. It's one of the first things that popped in my mind, having been on the Hill. The devil's in the details, and, you know, plus this administration still has its hands on this, and if anybody can do something that'll be a disaster in the next, you know, 30 days, they possibly may do or say something.
Well, speaking...
The Hill wants what's best for the American people, but that big question, who can best do it?
Right, and speaking of that, Bob Ney, I think it's important that we all remember that coming out of the box, a number of Democratic candidates, including Michael Dukakis, had a 17-point lead over George Herbert Walker Bush, and then they started running the Willie Horton ads.
Right.
I mean, there's a long history of October surprises. Jimmy Carter, four, maybe it was five weeks before the election, was 9 points ahead of Ronald Reagan. And then the hostages, they just didn't let the hostages go. They didn't let them go. He had a failed hostage rescue attempt, and he went down in flames. I mean, you know, what, in your opinion, what might be the October surprise? Because I don't believe that these guys, I don't think that they've pulled out their big guns yet. I think that they're going to do that in the next probably more than a week from now and less than 3 weeks from now.
Well, candidly, McCain campaign can probably surprise themselves the way things have been going. So, with Obama, they might try something, I don't know, vicious. You know, I mean, I've seen some things on the internet that I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me, you know.
Yeah.
They might try some of that, but I think that that can be overcome, those October surprises with the organization. And I got to tell you something. You know, John Kerry, last election, did not get it. He didn't get it in the state of Ohio and some other places of on-the-ground grassroots. There's Obama people all over, not just the state of Ohio, but, you know, but I'm just taking this state, for example. They're everywhere. So I think they're preparing for that kind of might be an October surprise.
But what if a bomb goes off in a major U.S. city? What if there's a suicide bombing, God forbid, in a major U.S. city and, you know, on the order of Tim McVeigh's Oklahoma City kind of thing?
Well, I'll tell you, just from what I observed last night, Joe Biden put to rest, frankly, a problem sometimes the Democrats have. Look, the Republicans are always like, we better take care of the country. Now, I was there on the Hill. But Joe Biden kind of put a lot of the foreign affairs to rest last night. In other words, gave a comfort level.
And I always find it fascinating. How can the Republicans claim that they're the party of a strong military and they know how to win wars when it was Democrats who won World War I? It was Democrats who won World War II. It was a Republican who lost the Vietnam War, if you want to use the language of the Republican Party. I don't get it.
How did the
Republicans turn day into night?
Well, I mean, I think with Bush and 9/11 and the response as it began was
with a bullhorn, but he let the thing happen.
But all of a sudden, you know, then we were into Iraq and the rest is history. And so right now, look, a lot of Republicans are running. I know Republicans, like, you know, protect their identity, but on the Hill, who won't do events with McCain and in the districts. And part of that's because, you know, the old question about, you know, who best can do that, McCain might have had some advantage points, but I can't overstress some comfort level Biden puts out there.
You mean, we're speaking with former Republican Congressman Bob Ney, with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. You mean that as Bush has become radioactive, John McCain is radioactive among Republicans?
There are members out there on the Republican side, and this happens both parties, depends on the candidate, you know. But there are some members that I know, McCain's people have called, and the members are like, well, we're a little busy that day. Well, how about next week? Well, we're busy that day, too. Some of that is going on, and it's sort of like this vote today. You know, take the vote, and you better watch the grenades that are going to be lobbed in here and there. So, yeah, some of that's going on.
It's going to, very interesting times we live in.
Biden did a great job last night.
He really did. I agree. Bob Ney, Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com, and give our best to Ellen, too.
I sure will.
Thanks for dropping by. Coming up Monday on the Tom Hartman program, I'll debate Brian Kennedy, VP of Public Affairs at the Institute of Energy Research, about the political and environmental impact of lifting the ban on offshore drilling. Plus, we'll be challenging Carrie Lucas of the Independent Women's Forum. I always love talking to Carrie. She's the Energizer Bunny of the conservative movement. On the outcome of the VP debate, And, of course, the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Sign up. Show up. Tag. You're it. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.